zombie takeout loaf. It's like olive loaf, but it's not. It's zombie takeout loaf. Why? Because there's zombie takeout in it. Oh wow, this totally blows my mind. Nobody's ever made zombie takeout loaf before, Juliet. Welcome to episode 33 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout!
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And this week, we're going back to Tromaville.
Oh, yeah.
With, I think, personally I can speak to this, a combination of two of my favorite things in the world. Troma and Shakespeare. That's right, Tromeo and Juliet.
I wonder if I should start with the program note about a past episode.
Okay.
I know, a little shaking things up a little differently and springing things on you, but a few episodes back, we had reviewed a movie by the name of Battlefield Earth.
Yes, we had.
It has, and I feel the need to talk about this because I gave it zero brains.
I also want to point out that all of the technical issues that caused that month and a half off happened after that show.
Yeah, that film is cursed, isn't it? Either that or it was Elrond.
Mm.
Anyway, the movie has collected the Razzie's worst movie of the decade.
Wow. And not a surprise, but I think that's a bit short-sighted. But
and the writer of the film has appeared in the New York Post, and I saw this in the local newspaper, The Red Eye, owned by the same affiliate, of course. Fox is everywhere. J.D. Shapiro is the man responsible for writing Battlefield Earth, which won the Razzie for Worst Movie of the Decade. Mm-hmm. He's now saying he's sorry in a letter that ran in the Post.
Oh, wow.
And
so that's
like
two
this.
Now. That's him and Forrest Whitaker both regret the movie.
Well, listen to this quote. "It wasn't as I intended. Promise. No one sets out to make a train wreck. Actually, comparing it to a train wreck isn't really fair to train wrecks because people actually want to watch those."
Wow.
I rest my case.
No, I have to admit, there are people. I know you're not one of them, but I am. There are people who want to watch Battlefield Earth, either for the right reasons or the wrong reasons. Which are right or wrong depends on your point of view.
Yeah, Kevin Smith had even, like, twittered something like that about, you know, guaranteed it's somebody's favorite movie out there when somebody had asked him about it. He's probably hoping somebody will say the same about Cop Out, but, you know, we digress.
Yes, yes. So, back to Tromeo and Juliet. And
yes.
Now it's time for Scotto's Impromptu's Plot Summary.
Well, if you haven't read the play, I mean, come on.
Brought to you by the Yale Edward De Vere's Library.
Oh, yes.
Shout out to the any TAS fans listening.
Anyway, all three of you. it follows the play pretty closely, except for a few variations on the end.
Yeah.
I'd say, normally we're like, well, we can't spoil it, but if you haven't figured out how it's going to end,
I mean,
I should personally visit your house and smack you around.
Not end, because the end, they do extend the ending a bit.
What do you
There is a bit after, they go on after the play ends.
The epilogue. Well, yeah, oh, I see what you mean.
So the very ending we can't spoil, but most of it, I mean, the original play, Shakespeare's play, West Side Story, the countless myriad ripoffs. Hell, Shakespeare ripped it off from Tristan and Isolde.
Michael Jackson.
And so, you know, if you don't know the story of Romeo and Juliet,
we should beat you with a Yale Shakespeare.
Yes.
Was that a Commodore 64 monitor that he? No,
I think it was.
So yeah, my impromptu plot summary is kind of shot this week because It is basically the story of Romeo and Juliet,
but
as told by a maniac,
set in
Cinemax
Manhattan.
porn horror
Yeah.
movie
No,
set in Manhattan.
well, set in Manhattan and traumatized.
Right, traumatized, that's the word for it. Narrated by the spectacular, well, I guess that's the impromptu
that's
plot
the impromptu
summary right
plot
there,
summary,
really. There is no, I'm
there's
not going to
really
tell
not
the
much we can
entire
do.
story of Romeo and Juliet here. There's only so much time we have.
Mm-hmm.
We got to talk about Lemmy.
Yes.
He is the narrator. And, I was looking at Lemmy's IMDb, and the interesting thing was the first people who actually casted him in something other than, being Lemmy and performing as Motorhead was the comic strip presents. Well, actually, no, there's somebody called Eat the Rich before that, I guess. I think Comic Strip Presents had to have come before that because they were on before 87.
Okay.
Those are the same guys that did The Young Ones.
Oh.
Right. Which Motorhead played in one of those
yes,
episodes,
of course.
Too. Ace of Spades, baby.
The
but
one
yeah.
song of theirs everyone knows.
You were, of course.
But
and
you really
why not?
Only need to know one Motorhead song, but continue.
Yeah. But yeah, what a great narrator.
Oh, and it surprised me because he actually did pretty well with the Shakespeare.
Of course, he's English.
Well, I don't know if every Brit understands Shakespeare at this point, but...
It's like an Asian that doesn't know martial arts? What? A British guy who doesn't know Shakespeare? For shame. For shame. Italians that don't eat pasta.
Yeah, exactly. Irishmen that don't drink.
Right. So... Are you still there?
I'm here.
Is this thing on? Is anybody home?
So again, yeah, he does pretty well with the Shakespeare.
Yes, he does.
And he actually understood what he was talking about. And that's one thing that surprised me with this. I've seen it a number of times, but this is the first time of course, as is often the case with this show, first time I watched it critically. And a lot of the younger cast members really did seem to know what they were saying.
Oh, that's the first thing you really notice. This whole cast just has such a zest for the script.
Yeah.
There's nobody who's phoning it in or anything like that here. And that's refreshing.
Really good performances, especially for a trauma film. And there are points when it goes into actual quotes from the play. And they pull those off just as well.
And they kind of parody it, plexiglass
yes,
and
yes.
stuff.
what through plexiglass breaks, yes.
Exactly. Brilliant stuff like that. One of my favorite cast members, of course, would have to be William Beckwith as Cappy Capulet.
Of course.
Just the rousing renditions of stuff, but at the end, giving us the reference where it's from.
Yeah.
Richard III, Act 4, Seat, whatever.
Incidentally, interesting side note. I believe it was Cappy, the actor who played Cappy, had to use an assumed name because the show was non-union, which wasn't a problem for the younger cast. They were able to find younger cast members who weren't part of SAG. They had
right.
trouble finding older cast members who weren't.
Yeah.
The actor who played Cappy is in SAG. But he used an assumed name.
That's why he's as Maximilian Sean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, he was like in Scent of a Woman before this.
Okay, I thought he looked familiar. He's probably done a number of things.
Yeah, I thought he had done a number of things too, but his IMDb is very,
okay.
very barren. Probably hasn't gotten cast much since doing a non-union gig.
Well, true.
They tend to crack down on that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm sure he's done stage work too, and I'd love to see him in something serious or, whatever.
Because he's deliberately chewing the scenery in this one.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell he's having a blast and just
he is.
Eating the hell out of the scenery.
I mean, come on, he was like an extra, well, not an extra, but a bit part in The Scent of a Woman and stuff. Mm. And everything else had just been bit parts. But this, I mean, he was just, I get to do this, and just having a blast, and it comes through the film. It shows.
And
it's a lot like last week's movie.
Yeah.
where everybody, you could tell everybody was, you don't see that every day, for every film.
Mm-hmm. And once again, with regard to Cap, I have to nitpick. Exploding crossbow bolts. His weapon of choice is a crossbow. Anytime he gets into any kind of fight situation, he goes for his crossbow, which is amusing in and of itself.
Of course.
But when he fires them, they explode. I mean, I'm not going to analyze it further. I just thought it was funny because, I mean, it's trauma. You're not looking for realism. But
right.
In the casting department, did you know, of course, I'm sure you noticed, the cameos from Kabuki Man and Toxie?
Yes, I love that. Nice, very nice touch. Just members, party goers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just in the background at a party.
Toxie's got his mop. He's at a party dancing around with his mop. And Kabuki Man's just, I don't know what he's doing there.
And since we're on the cast, I'll get to a bit of trivia. Sammy Capulet, the one who looked kind of like a demented Hare Krishna with the sock.
Yes.
Was played by Sean Gunn, brother of James Gunn, the writer.
Okay.
He's also best known for playing Kirk on the Gilmore Girls.
I thought he was the guy from System of a Down for a while there.
Hmm.
If you take the video for, Sugar.
Okay.
Darren Malachi, I never get this guy's name right.
Oh, the guitar player.
Yes. Back then, he had the short blonde hair like that.
Yeah, I can see the resemblance.
You take a cat from that video and put the two side by side.
Yeah, I can definitely see the resemblance. another cast note, Tiffany Shepis, who has done, is well known as, for trauma, or work with trauma. The one that Sammy hits on after he hits on his sister. Your breasts are more pear-shaped than my sister's. The one who gets, pinned under the chair by the cop.
Yeah.
He was 16 when they shot the movie.
Woo.
Just wanted to put that there.
And so the father that sang Found a Peanut was the writer of the film, huh?
Yes.
That's... one thing I took from this movie, any scene that trauma does that involves children...
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have never seen anyone use children quite such genius that they have.
Yeah. And there was one scene, I think it was when Sammy died when he hit the... it was after a death. Either mm-hmm. Sammy or Tyrone. The little girl who crosses her eyes.
Yes.
Where did they find a kid who could do that so well?
I don't... Well, kids could do... some very weird things. Want to be in a movie? Sure. But yeah, that whole Found a Peanut scene had me rolling. Just the whole, you're expecting the kids to go, instead they're just, well, that reaction we won't ruin.
Well, no. I was going to explain the scene, but no, I can't.
It just doesn't go in the direction you expect.
No.
All right, so, I guess the last guy to mention, of course, is Lloyd Kaufman himself.
Yes.
I didn't... Maybe I did say this last time we did a trauma film, but I did not realize he was connected to The Final Countdown, the old Martin Sheen and Kirk Douglas movie, where they're in a battleship, and it goes back in time to, Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I know that movie.
Yeah, that was... He was like an associate producer and, of course,
he did
a cameo and stuff.
He attempted to do legitimate movies before he founded Trauma.
I think that's the most legitimate one he did.
Squeeze
Play as being like a legitimate movie, but you really can't call that.
It got theatrical release. That's about as
right.
legitimate as it got. I mentioned this when we did Toxie. He was involved with another film company with... that included Oliver Stone before Trauma was founded.
Right. But, there's legit film release, theatrical release, and then there's working with Kirk Douglas.
Yeah. True.
I love how they gave William Shakespeare writing credit. Maybe that's just IMDb.
No, I think it's in the end credits.
Yeah. No one gave Edward de Vere anything, though, huh? Oh well. What is our next segment?
Well, I don't know if we have a next. We don't really break this section of the show down.
I almost forgot about the working with children. Of course, I was going to go back to the tired old Father Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
My
one disappointment in the movie, which was the priest pedo jokes. Which is weird, and I think it speaks to the quality of the movie, because you expect that from a trauma film.
But I think they redeemed it. It was worth it, the old tire jokes, just for the one fantasy sequence.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was kind of groaning, oh, man, I can't believe they're doing this. I mean, it is 96 and all that, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, it was in the news.
Old for then. And they did this little sequence. He's talking about lost love.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, I can't believe they went there. But it is trauma. They do not disappoint.
Well, true. And I think any other trauma film, a priest pedo joke isn't going to shock you or surprise you or even disappoint you. It just kind of goes with the territory. The fact that we were disappointed with them in this movie just speaks to the quality of it.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It is pure trauma.
Yeah.
Lots of, obviously fake gore, lots of violence, lots of gratuity. Actually, not that much gratuitous nudity, but a fair amount.
Yeah, there's kind of a Cinemax thing going on there for a bit.
Lots of language. It is your typical trauma film. Sick, twisted, brilliant. But it's of a higher quality. It is by far my favorite trauma film, and I know my trauma.
While we were on the subject of porn there for a bit, I loved the Shakespearean porn collection.
I was just going to get to that, yes. Tromeo's porn CDs with titles like As You Lick It and...
That was my favorite.
The Merchant of Penis.
Merchant of Penis, not so much. As You Lick It, funny as hell.
And I mentioned the gratuitous nudity. There is one scene, and this was, actually, most of it wasn't gratuitous. I was thinking about that. But there was one scene that was. It was pure shock value. But you gotta love the close-up nipple piercing.
I was kind of confused by that. I wasn't sure if it was hot or funny.
Well, exactly. That's the brilliance of it.
I just kind of... sat there and looked at my monitor like a cocker spaniel going, huh?
That's what they were going for.
What?
And
is that? Huh?
It pays to read the credits, especially in a trauma film, because they're funny. But also because you find out things like it was a stunt breast, stunt nipple, provided by Sandy Brockwell.
Well, of course it was a stunt nipple. No one could actually go, because then, the actual piercing that was on it was, half a tenth the size, if that even.
Yeah, yeah. And if you watch closely, the breast actually gets smaller when they zoom in.
Yeah. My favorite part of the credits were when they talked about the endangered gray hair or silver hair rodent that was the only animal that was harmed in the making of the film. Oops.
Now, just going back a bit, there are bits of actual Shakespeare in the piece, slightly modified to either for humor value or just to fit the slightly different setting. But there's also, they do the backstory in, I think it was iambic pentameter. I mean, it wasn't Shakespearean.
They do have a rhyming scheme for some the beginning and the end.
When they talked about the whole bit, but how the feud between Cappy and Monty started, in Silky Films and all that, that was poetic form.
And honestly, I don't know how much trouble I can get in for saying this, but I'm reading plays that are coming up for the theater I happen to work for, and I swear they deliver the exposition better for this than they do for one of the plays I've read that's coming.
Wow.
Up. So, I mean, not that it's all good here, but it's not really saying much, Kaufman can write a better script than a certain playwright. Okay.
Okay.
I think I've almost gotten all my notes out on this one here.
I just have
points.
A couple more.
Yeah.
The car flipping sequence. Back to the have a peanut or found a peanut family. That car flip has been used in Sergeant Kabuki Man, Terra Firma, Citizen Toxie, and a number of other Troma films. They just recycling it.
Because it looked out of place. I was kind of like, what? What's going on here? But it was funny at the same time, too, because it was just so over the top, and it just kept going. And that was some of the... When they went to violence, they went all in. Well, it was just like, whoa.
That's the thing, is they had the budget for it once.
And in fact, some of it was very, you know, impressively realistic, just the way they did the stunt, kind of, not even the effect, nonetheless. But the way they did, I mean, and the more realistic it was, the funnier it was, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some cartoon gore, but when you see someone, like, getting, like, stabbed in the eye or something, and the way they sold it, you know, just...
And I think that happened throughout the movie. Even when the dialogue got more serious and the performances amped up a bit, it actually lent to the humor.
Yeah.
Because they were taking it so seriously.
I tell you one thing that took away, well, just the physical performance of the stunt. It just gotta give them props for that. The one thing though that did not work well for me, the effect of Juliet's change from the potion.
Oh yeah, yeah. See, to me that was classic Troma. That was where they went back to the old school.
Yeah.
And they wanted to make
it such a letdown after all the, like, the fourth act and all of the crazy violence that was going on, and they're selling this, and you're just like, whoa. And then they get to this change that just went on
too long,
and this weird orange filter that they were using as a lens to get the effect.
Like I said about the pedo joke, the moments where they go to the stock Troma stuff are a bit of a letdown because the rest of it is so good.
Yeah.
Because that's stock Troma. Just one other thing in my notes, and I have called this out.
Okay.
Best line in the movie, I think. But son, I'm black.
That was a great line. Tromeo's father's black.
Yeah, Monty's black.
I will use air quotes. Father is black. I think you can figure it out for yourself. If you're surprised by the twist in the ending, I think we should come and beat you with a Yale Shakespeare.
Or a sock folk orders.
Yeah. London. I almost forgot about London. London Arbuckle is his
name? Yes.
Was he not doing a Kramer impression?
I don't know. Come to think of it, yeah, it was a little... It wasn't so much Kramer. It was a little more like an angry Stanley Spadowski.
I'm telling you. You look at that first... You know, the first time he's on, his first scene in Act 2, he's so doing a Kramer.
Yeah, okay.
Think about it. This is 96. Seinfeld was huge then.
True. Good point.
Yeah. I mean, he even almost had the hair.
True. I hadn't thought about that.
So Kramer, the guy from System of a Down.
And, okay, who can we compare Will Keenan to? Tromeo. Because he does kind of look... Oh, he's a young Travolta.
Well, yeah, I think
he's
were...
He's
kind of
got
part,
the young Travolta thing going.
We're in the part where if they remade it...
Okay, we have to sequels and remakes. Okay.
Yeah, and they could so remake this.
Yeah. Well, first off, before we get to remakes... after the success of Tromeo, Troma planned, this is from, I think, IMDb, planned to develop a spiritual successor entitled Shock and Shockability, a play on sense, a play on, of course, sense and sensibility.
Oh my god, that's great.
In which Jane Austen is reincarnated as a well-endowed female who takes revenge on all of the Hollywood movie producers who have bastardized her novels.
Oh, that's good.
At one point, Troma announced that the film would head into production, but as of 2008, there's no plans to make it, unfortunately.
Well,
they need
to. Then they did the whole Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I think they should have a scene of her just finding that writer there and...
Yeah.
And
doing whatever.
Fate worse than death.
Yes. Now, on to remakes. Easy to remake, but do you want to?
I say yeah. Why not? Go all the way.
Yeah.
Have fun with it.
Who are you thinking?
Well, I think Kaufman could remake it himself.
Oh, of course.
And I think he should try to do it with a better budget, even.
That would be awesome. I would love to
It
see.
would.
I would love to see Lloyd get a budget. I don't know if it's going to happen.
I don't see why not. He's made money with these things.
Oh, yeah.
He
That's
hasn't
true.
put much in it. He's gotten a return.
That's true. That's probably more the issue. Is it's not that they don't have the money. It's just Lloyd doesn't want to put it into the movies.
Right. But if he did, Jane Jensen, you know, she did a great job with Juliet, really.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know who I could replace her with. I'd keep her.
Yeah.
She probably still looks like she's, you know, 18
probably.
Or whatever. It was ridiculous finding out that she was like, what, 30-something or whatever. Or
was she?
Was 30, or she was close to 30 when she did that.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I did not know that. Actually, a lot of the cast I would keep. I'm not looking at IMDb, so I don't know names, but the guy who played Murray, the blonde guy. Great job. He's the typical heavy, you know?
Yeah. So are we saying they should redo this with the same cast?
For the most part. I mean, there's nobody I would recast who had any kind of a significant part.
You know, I think you're right. But yeah, so just bigger budget, and I think we're set here.
Hmm.
So sequel, that's funny. I can't see a sequel to Romeo and Juliet.
I mean, no. You don't do that. There is a bit of room, I guess, but it wouldn't be the same story. It would just be, you know, catching up with Romeo and Juliet later.
Yeah. It just wouldn't work.
No. The joke was made at the end, and that's that.
Right.
So we're up the brains already.
Wow. Wow. I guess we've done, we've set out what we've accomplished to do.
Yeah. Like I said, this is by far my favorite trauma film, and I am a big trauma fan, so I gotta go 5.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on this. I mean, it definitely can't be below 4. I'm not sure if I want to go all the way for 5, though. I think I'm gonna stick with 4, though, because, I mean, it's a
like, there
very...
is that one in the middle.
What's that?
There is 4.5.
Do I go wuss out and give it 4.5? I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I did love this movie. I can see myself watching it again. I just can't see myself watching this like 1,000,001 times.
Okay.
So I decided I'm just going to be a little tough, you know, and stick with 4.
Okay. And so what have we learned?
We learned that fruit and meat should not should stay separate.
Yes. And I learned that Silky Films makes the worst motherfucking films in the world.
Thank you, Bob Chase.
Another shout out to the PAS.
Yeah. Alrighty. So next week's
Do we know what we're doing? We don't know what we're doing next week.
No, we have no idea what we're doing
so
next week.
It'll be on the blog when this episode is posted. Until then, check out zombietakeout.com, the blog in question.
Love us, damn it.
Yes. Please comment.
Yes.
You might have noticed there are no more movie clips. There's an issue with WordPress. Apparently it doesn't like YouTube embeds anymore. But, you know, everything else is still there. The links to the Wikipedia page and the IMDb page, the album art, the summary. Of course, all the links to the Facebook group, the Twitter account, all of the ways to subscribe to the show, zombietakeout.com. Please go. Please comment.
Yes. Your feedback would be greatly appreciated.
Yes, it would. So until next week, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
What light from yonder plexiglass breaks?
I don't have to watch the movie.